Welcome to Real Money with David Holland, the show that focuses on real people, real problems, and real solutions. David is a certified financial planner with over 20 years of financial experience. And because he actually provides advice to clients on a daily basis, our hyperactive compliance department wants us to tell you that David Holland is an investment advisor representative of Holland Advisory Services, a registered investment advisory firm. He also offers insurance and annuity products through Holland Insurance Services. Holland Advisory Services and Holland Insurance Services are separate affiliated companies that share common ownership under Holland Financial. Commentary given during this radio program is usually pretty smart, but should not be considered investment, insurance, tax, or legal advice. Views expressed concerning specific securities should not be considered an offer to buy or sell. Investment advice and financial planning services can only be given after an analysis of an individual's situation. Only if you hire David and his firm to help you, and only available where Holland Advisory Services is registered or exempt from registering. Here he is, David Holland.
All right. So I've had this question. Actually, four different people asked me the same question. I said, that means something, David. You need to answer that question. And the question is it smarter to invest or pay down debt? And you say, well, it depends. Well, yeah, of course. And it always depends on each person's situation. But there's a few general things I would say to you about this. And the first is we've got to look at some of the other priorities. Before we start paying off debt, we need to look and make sure that we've got other things taken care of. Okay, so some of this is going to be very basic. Some of it hopefully will be helpful. So the first thing we want to look at is, do we have an emergency fund? In other words, if we're in a position to where we're thinking about either investing or paying off debt, then obviously we've got to have some cash on hand, right? I mean, that's why we're thinking about it. I've got this money in my pocket and I've got to do something with it. So the first thing we do is we need to set aside enough money to take care of whatever's going to potentially break or go wrong. So if you're working, you're still part of the working class, you're not at retirement yet or into retirement where you've made that transition, then you need to think about, well, what if you lose your job? Or if you're a business owner, what if something goes wrong at your business? I mean, that's just part of it. I think about that as a business owner myself. I have to have cash reserves so that if we have something happen, what if something happens, if there's a hurricane or who knows what, that's why they're called emergencies. And that's why a lot of them are unforeseen emergencies that we don't really know what's going to happen. So we need to have money set aside. Same with your own personal situation, that if you have a change and say with your work, I just met with a couple not too long ago where this had happened and they're kind of thinking about what to do. And we've talked through their planning. And we've set cash aside in their plan until he gets a new job, or maybe he decides to start his own business. We're talking through that. So we've got a cash reserve for that. So after we've got the cash emergency fund, then the next thing to look at is insurance. Now, I'm not talking about maybe looking at every type, but some of the basic stuff. If you are retired, and have you looked at maybe a supplemental Medicare policy? Or have you looked at long-term care insurance? And if you've looked at your own personal homeowners or your liability, or just sit down and review that with your insurance professional and have them help you make sure you've got everything covered. Do you have an umbrella policy that if something happens that you really mess up where there's a liability, an auto accident or something else, that there is enough insurance in place? If you've got a little bit of extra cash, maybe now's the time to look at that. Speaking of not skimping, if you are working and you have access to a 401k, are you maxing it out? And when I mean that, are you putting in the maximum allowed based on your age that you're allowed to defer of your salary? Because if you've got some extra cash on hand, before you maybe look at paying off debt, if you're not at least putting enough in to get the match, then that's obviously something you want to do. And then any money you can put away, you're putting away, saving it on a pre-tax basis. That's a really great way to save for retirement. And that, I would definitely look at that. If you have that taken care of, or you're not working, and we can look at a few other things, are there any pending obligations? Again, before we talk about paying off debt or we talk about investing, do we have any big cash obligations coming down the road? I just met with a couple and we're doing some planning, and we know that they're going to need to get a new vehicle and they're doing a kitchen remodel. So we set those monies aside before we look at paying off any debt or investing the money. Now, let's look at next, what do we do about investing or the debt question? Okay, the next thing we look at is, do we have any high interest debt? That's easy, right? I mean, if there's high interest debt, and in this interest rate environment, 6, 8, 10, Anything of that range, definitely let's try to pay that off before we invest. I had a woman in the other day, and she had a pretty high interest rate line of credit she had drawn on, and she had cash in the bank, and it was earning nothing, and she was paying the interest. And it was easy for us to talk through that and say, let's pay that off. You're earning that. You're earning what you're not paying in interest, in effect. Now, if you've got a couple different debts, and if their interest rate is the same, then the next thing you look at is maybe the size of the payment, and you also can look at whether the debt is tax deductible. Generally speaking, if you've got two debts and they're the same rate, you want to pay off the one that's not tax deductible first. Now, if you're not itemizing, that may be a moot point, but you want to look at the debt that is not giving you the tax break. Now, the other thing, which may be a little counterintuitive, I'll mention it to you, you can think about this. If you've got, it may not also make sense sometimes to pay off the highest interest rate debt. Sometimes you're better off paying the lower interest debt. Well, when would that be? Well, generally speaking, at the time of the taping of this program, everyone expects interest rates to go up in the future. And if we're in a rising interest rate environment, then if you've got a variable rate and a fixed rate, you might want to pay off the variable rate interest, even if it's lower than the fixed rate. So let's say you have a 4% fixed rate mortgage and you've got a 3% variable rate. You might be better off paying off the 3% variable rate, because if rates jump up quickly, that variable might go to 5 or 6%. Same is true if you've got something where it was an adjustable rate mortgage for a set number of years and you're coming close to the end of that period. So these are all things to think about before you decide what debt to pay, and also before you decide to invest. Now, here's another thing to keep in mind or make part of this thought process. What is your risk tolerance? You say, wait a minute, risk tolerance is investing. Why are we talking about that with debt? Well, if you've got a very low risk tolerance and you've got some debt, and even if it's not real high debt, let's say it's 4%, and you've got cash and you've got debt that's 4%. If you have a really low risk tolerance, that means you can't take the up and downs of the market. Well, I'll take the up. It's the down that we're worried about, right? So unless you've got a comfort level with that, if you pay off the debt, it's done. And you've in effect, again, earned that even if it's a lower rate, 3 or 4%, you've earned that logically by paying off that debt. If you've got a higher risk tolerance, then a 3 or 4% debt interest rate might not be a big deal, and you're looking for those higher returns and you're willing to take risks to do that. You're willing to accept the fact that you're going to keep the debt that you could have paid off to invest in the market. Now, here's one more way of looking at this. Let's say that you have no debt, you have no cash to invest, okay? You've got a clean slate, but you do have access to a $100,000 line of credit. To get a real true measure of your comfort level with debt, here's my question. You've got a $100,000 line of credit, no debt now, you haven't drawn on it, no investments. Would you take the $100,000 or some portion of it, pull it against a line of credit, in other words, write a check out of that line of credit to open up a brokerage account and invest? Would you borrow money to invest in the market? That's the question, because if you would, then if you've got debt, then maybe if it's a relatively low rate, then maybe you keep that and then you go and invest the cash you have. So if you've got cash and you're thinking about whether you want to pay debt off or you want to invest it, do this little test with yourself. Say, well, okay, let's assume I don't have any debt and I don't have any cash and I've got a line of credit and I could borrow up to $100,000. Would you to invest in the market? And if the answer is yes, then maybe you keep your debt and then use the cash you have to invest, because that's just basically the same thing. If, however, you say to yourself, and maybe even to me, you say, David, you're crazy, I wouldn't pull on my line of credit to invest in the market, well, then that's the same as paying the debt. You should pay the debt off. You should go ahead, and so if you say you've got $20,000 in debt you owe, and you've got $100,000 in cash or $50,000 in cash or whatever your situation is, then before you invest, you're going to feel more comfortable if you paid that debt off, and as opposed to investing, because that same process, that's all the same thing. And sometimes we have to kind of go through these different, it's not really a mind game, but we have to because you have to move yourself out of your own situation and say, well, if I were in this situation, what would I do? And again, everybody's situation is different, and you've really got to think about your situation carefully. If you'd like me to expand on this, or you've got another question for me, don't forget you can email me at info@davidholland.com. I'm happy to answer questions, and I will not give your personal information out. Give me your name. First name is usually how I'll refer to you on the radio program, and give me maybe your town so I know where you are. But info@davidholland.com. More than happy to answer your questions right here on this radio program. We're going to take a quick break. Come right back. Stay tuned.
There are hundreds of annuities available in today's marketplace. How can you know if one is right for you? Certified financial planner David Holland answers this question and more in his educational booklet on annuities. To get your free copy, call Holland Financial at 888-747-PLAN. The annuity booklet provides a plain English explanation of the different types of annuities so you can decide if one is a good fit for your situation. Again, that number is 888-747-7526.
What's your dream? Play golf every day of the week? Turn that hobby into a new career? With careful planning, you can make it happen. Call 888-747-PLAN to schedule your no-obligation consultation. At Holland Financial, we want to help you take the first step towards making your dreams a reality. That number again is 888-747-7526.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. I have a special treat for you, a very relevant treat, I might add, to much of the stress and tumult of the government shutdown, slowdown, showdown that we witnessed that just had people pulling their hair out on Wall Street. Well, I have a gentleman on the line that's going to help explain why people do what they do with their money and why our psychology affects all this. And his name is Gary Belsky. He is the Chief Content Officer at Ellen Road Partners. He has a political science and speech communications degree from the University of Missouri. He is the former editor-in-chief of ESPN, the magazine, and ESPN.com. Gary, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me. I think all your listeners are probably wondering, why is the guy who used to be the editor-in-chief of ESPN talking about personal finance? For about 8 years, I was a writer at Money Magazine.
Okay.
I was actually a regular guest on Good Morning America. And
oh, cool.
CNN,
that fills out. That makes sense.
Yeah, so I spent the first 15 years of my career writing about business and economics, and then the last 15 years I've been heavily involved in sports and general content, but I've also on the side continued to lecture and write about money issues, and the book Why Smart People Make Big Money Mistakes is probably my biggest accomplishment, because it's about what has become a very hot new science, behavioral economics, which is essentially the psychology of decision-making, and it's specifically focused on how regular people, smart people, can sort of get tripped up by the blind spots, the mental blind spots they have that are perfectly natural part of being human, but can get in the way of smart financial decision making.
Yeah, that's really the key, isn't it, Gary? The book is available on Amazon and all other places where good books are available. The full title, give Gary proper credit for this achievement, Why Smart People Make Big Money Mistakes and How to Correct Them, Lessons from the Life-Changing Science of Behavioral Economics. And I've shared before Gary and I started the program here that I dealt with this on a regular basis. And there's a lot in your book, Gary, and we're not going to be able to get to all of it, but one of the things that you talk about is what you call the recency effect?
It's called the recency bias. It's not
bias.
My phrase. It's
okay.
A phrase in the science. Yeah, and you know about this because of your years of experience, and we're witnessing it now, which is that we've actually been witnessing it over the past few years, which is that people in general, our brains have evolved, our brains, you know, developed to pay extra, super special attention to the most recent and the loudest noises, the most recent and the loudest clues or stimulus in our environment. It's a pretty good strategy to have if you're walking around the jungle or in the savannah and you hear a roar, you really want to get, you know, start running because there might be a lion. But the roars in life now, in modern life, are often not anything that you should be paying attention to.
Well, I think, Gary, I can't help but point out, you know, that that's a great identification for cable news that runs all day, and all they have are roars all day long. And if people, all they're doing is watching television, you know, that's going to freak them out.
Exactly. They treat, they have to, their business, they have to treat everything that they do and that they're talking about as super important because they want you to keep your eyes on their screen and not change the channel. But the fact of the matter is, for most money decisions, for most, and certainly for most investment decisions, what matters are the long-term strategies and the long-term ideas that you have, rather than what's happening yesterday or happened today. Because almost always, that stuff is just noise. And you know, the examples I like to give are when I first started out in journalism, I was working for a magazine called Crain's New York Business. And early in my career, I was on the floor of the New York Stock Exchange when it crashed on Black Tuesday in 1987. We did a big story that year, a big package that week. And during, you know, about the effects and small investors and fund managers and all these sorts of things. And I was talking to a source of mine, and he walked me through a story. And he said that he goes, I'm a fund manager. And this is on the phone, by the way. And he goes, I'm a fund manager. I'm a money manager. I've got 150 clients. He goes, I want you to guess how many of my clients have called me over the past 2 days. And I didn't know what he was saying, so I guessed, you know, whatever I guessed, 100. And he said, no, 130 of my 150 clients have called me in the past 2 days. And I was like, wow. And he goes, I want you to guess how many of them wanted me to sell some or all of their stocks. And I made a guess, and he said, of the 130, 128 wanted me to sell all. And then he goes, I want you to guess how old the other two were. The question surprised me, and I said, I have no idea. And he goes, the two people who called me and said, start buying, are both over 80 years old. And how I didn't know what he meant, because I was young, and I said, what does that mean? He goes, they've seen this before. They know that everybody else is going to start selling stocks because they're paying too much attention to the most recent roar. They've been through a couple of these. They want me to start buying because they know that things are getting cheaper. And I always like to tell that story, right? Because it's the long term is what matters, not the short term.
Well, and you're 1,000% correct, Gary. And I've seen it, and I am pleased to say that at my clients, we only had a few call and say, "What do you think?" And we're like, "Well, here's what's going on. Here's our opinion. You know, with regard to the government shutdown and all that stuff." I said, "We're staying put. Are you making any changes?" Only the normal changes we would make when we rebalance your portfolio, do reallocation. In fact, we're taking this opportunity to kind of make some changes we wanted to make. So, and not a single person, I'm pleased to say, not a single person said, get me out.
Well, good for you. It's one of the reasons why I, you know, in general, when I was at Money Magazine, there was a bias, as you know, towards people managing their own finances.
Sure,
and that's
sure.
Fine. Some people can do that, but it's worth it to pay for a financial advisor if the financial advisor makes you smarter and makes you calmer, right? That's what a good financial advisor does, is help you understand how to stay the course when there are winds that are trying to sort of get you to go one way or the other. It's very difficult, and it's a perfect example of the recency bias is the government shutdown, right? Because although it's been mentioned, if you ask most Americans how often this has happened before, they would tell you, oh my God, this is the first time it's ever happened, or it's so rare. There have been 17, you know, government shutdowns, I think, in the last 50 or 60 years. And what I always like to say is the U.S. economy and the stock market has done quite well over that period, hasn't it? Like, in general, these things, when they're happening, seem much more significant than they do over the long run.
And you know, you talked about the value for some people of having an advisor, and I of course have a bias. I think that a lot of people should have an advisor. And another word that I would use, you said, you know, keeping people calm. Another is a buffer. You know, I purposely, and this is the way we set it up, every one of my clients has access to their accounts online. They just don't have trading authority. They can look as much as they want. They just don't have trading authority because
right.
I want to be that buffer because I have a 3-no policy. If they want to sell, I say no 3 times and try to, you know, obviously help them make the right decision. And, you know, real world examples to add to what you're saying, Gary, I had a gentleman one time who insisted, and I begged, boy, I don't like to beg, but I begged him not to sell. He got out when the Dow was at 6,500 points back in March of 2009, and he's still in cash.
Right, exactly. It's like I love that 3-no policy. It's in Judaism, which is a non-proselytizing religion. When somebody wants to convert, they are told no 3 times by the converting rabbi, and it's only if they come back after the 3rd time that he or she is sure that that person actually is really, you know, has true zeal. And your strategy is the same thing, which is like, I'm not going to let you sell on impulse. I want to make sure that you thought about it, that you consider it. It's a wise strategy. Essentially, the best financial advisors help people be their best selves and keep them from being their worst selves, right? And that's what a good partnership does. It's what I always want to tell people, right? It's like, it's worth the fee if the partnership makes you stronger, better, faster, whatever the case may be. It's just like anything else, like getting a personal trainer. It's like,
Yeah.
Having somebody, you know, having a doctor deal with your medical problems as opposed to yourself.
Sometimes people get a little caught up in cost. And you know what? If an advisor charges, you know, 1-1.5% for a whole year of money management and buffering, you know, the market goes up 1-2% on a daily basis. 1% is what I call the heartbeat of the market. It's just natural.
Right. Well, again, I mean, it ultimately comes down to value, right?
It's like, exactly.
25 basis points is too much if the advice is bad or the financial advisor isn't. I don't mean bad meaning performance, because performance can sometimes not have anything to do with the advisor. I just mean if the advisor is not helping you be your best investor, then it doesn't. Then any penny you pay them is too much. And if an advisor is helping you be the best investor and be happy and calm and not stressed, then it's worth, you know, quite a few basis points.
Outstanding. Well, I couldn't agree more, Gary. Gary Belsky's been our guest today, ladies and gentlemen. His book, you have to pick it up. I'm looking forward to reading it myself. Why Smart People Make Big Money Mistakes and How to Correct Them, Lessons from the Life-Changing Science of Behavioral Economics. Gary, we're going to have you come back because I know there's a lot more we can talk about.
I would enjoy that. Thank you very much.
Okay, thanks for being on the program.
Want to learn more about Real Money with David Holland? Visit us at realmoneyradio.com, where you can listen live or to the archives. You can also email us your questions, comments, or show ideas to info@realmoneyradio.com. Be sure to like us on Facebook at Real Money with David Holland.
Remember, nobody cares more about your money than you do. This has been Real Money with David Holland. Thank you for listening.